so we're like, all right, we're gonna pull an RV in there and just make it a, like the fucking smoke room. We can't even afford a booth in there because it was like, you know, we couldn't afford it. And so we're like, let's pull up an RV and just fucking have weed and fucking our vibe and do it. And it went well.
Crazy.
Until we left the park.
All right, High Rise Podcast, always pushing. Welcome back.
Very early stages, the cops came to my house and accused me of selling drugs.
What NFTs are doing is creating these communities. It's like, you guys aren't going to understand this voyage we're on. Meanwhile, they don't realize that the market that's in the store is very different from the market that's on the street.
The exact same feeling I got from them is the feeling I got from the weed men. And that's why I went into cannabis full time. But it's like the sum of the parts.
All right, what's up, guys? Welcome back to another High Rise Podcast. As you guys know, we're skateboarders. We love weed. We grew up skateboarding. And we wanted to bring on a guest who is probably one of the most OG skateboard industry, cannabis industry guests. So, yeah, welcome, Craig Najedli.
All right, thank you, guys.
Hell, it's nice to be here.
Yeah. So, Craig is the owner of Talking Trees Farms and Satori Movement, which is a skateboard wheel and clothing company, correct?
Yep.
And it's been around since 1998, Satori.
Yeah.
And for you guys who don't know skateboarding, Satori's literally like the stoniest, headiest, like Rasta vibe company for the last 25 years. And it's like still kicking. You guys are still dropping videos. You still got a sick ass team. I just watched a video from a couple months ago. You got Brian De La Torre. You got all these dudes like Kenny Anderson. You got the legends on the team. So we're going to talk to Craig. We're going to see how he went from skateboarding to cannabis and the influence on both of them. So I don't necessarily have to run through the whole story, but tell us about moving to San Francisco in 1998 and then cultivating cannabis. And you started cultivating in 1999?
Yeah, about 1998, actually. So I grew up in, like, Georgia. I was born in New York, but grew up, like, 17 years in Georgia. And then at, like, 1996, I was 18 years old, and I was, like, working at Woodward Skate Camp in Pennsylvania on the summers since I was 15. And so I just decided, like, I'm leaving Georgia. You know, I was ready to leave.
Later, yeah.
It was just too conservative. I wanted to go skate, and you know, skateboarding brought me to San Francisco via Woodward Skate Camp. And, you know, just landed in there with, like, good friends that I had made at camp, like Patrick O'Dell, who's a pretty well-known photographer, and stayed with him. And then, and, you know, that was kind of a rough transition, actually, one of the roughest times of my life. And landing in San Francisco at 18 and not having money and the connections, you know, I ended up homeless at a certain point. And
what was the plan? Just show up and I'm going to skate and just figure it out and whatever. I just want to get to California and just go skate.
Yeah, no, like, so where I stayed in my buddy Patrick's house was like about as big as this room.
Yeah.
His bed folded out of the wall. And like, I slept under the little kitchen table, smaller than this. And after like a month, he's like, bro, like, you know, I wasn't super actively looking for work. You got to get out of here. And I'm like, yeah, looking for a job and, you know, trying to figure all that out. And, you know, at 18 to 20 years old, you're going through all this mental stuff going on and like expanding your mindset and where you're going to go in life. So, you know, I just went through it and was focused on skating and just like meeting good people, and then wound up at a house with like some guys that wound up being like Cairo Foster, Elias Bingham, and some other really well-known skaters in the industry. And we all just became super good friends, and they gave me eight people and a 2-bedroom apartment. I had a spot on the living room floor, and
that wasn't like the Newell house, or that wasn't like the Newell spot or whatever. No, that was like Frank Gerwer in those days.
Yeah, that was before that. It was
so you live with Patrick O'Dell from Vice, the dude who does Epically Later, like one of our huge inspirations for what we're doing with the channel.
I lived under his kitchen table.
That's so crazy.
We were roommates, but I lived under his kitchen table for a month or two, and Pat was great, man. Awesome guy.
Dude, so sick. So is that where you started smoking cannabis? Were you doing back in Georgia, or is that when you moved to SF?
Yeah, no, I started smoking cannabis pretty much about a year or two before that. Like, my brother, you know, I'm the fifth of six kids, so I had four older brothers, and eventually I broke down. You know, I was kind of like more of the skater, just trying to focus and not be a stoner, drinking too much as a kid. So about 17, I was like, all right, I'll smoke a joint with you.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, all right, that's pretty cool.
Like, here we go.
And so that kind of just transitioned into moving to San Francisco for skateboarding, and then just kind of tying into these guys that had a skate shop in Athens, Georgia, which is like the college town where UGA is. And that was called Amped. And they were like, just these deadhead dudes that like started a hemp clothing and skate shop brand. And I was like, wow, you guys are like, who the hell are you guys? Like, they're growing indoor in Georgia in 96 to 98, which is like super like,
pretty crazy.
You're going to jail all the time if you get busted, and growing good weed. And so I just kind of like, I was attracted to their vibe and wanted to become friends with them. And then one of the owners of that skate shop and I started Satori, and it was actually his idea to start a business. I was like a 19-year-old kid, and I just happened to know like the skaters, because I was out there skating. And so I was in California and he was in Georgia, and he's like, let's start a brand. And I'm like, well, I've been reading this book, let's call it Satori. There was like no hesitation on what we call it. It was like just that instantaneous, what Satori is, like that instantaneous moment of just like enlightenment and being in the flow. And I was reading this book called Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and that's kind of where I learned about like what Satori was. And shit just kind of spiraled out from there.
Crazy. So you're living in SF, you're just skating, you're hanging out with all these dudes, make these relationships, and then you put a team together, right? So the way I look at Satori, I've been talking about it, it's crazy because you guys have been around for like 25 years and 25 years, and you guys were like this niche brand, right? Like, you had like the Rasta vibe, and you've been around skating for how long? You've seen how many brands come and go, and how many brands come in and try to do some niche shit and they're gone in 18 months. And the fact that also the amount of skateboarders who actually were the vibe of the Satori high grade vibe was 1% of skateboarding, 2%, but everybody in skateboarding backed you guys and everybody respected you guys, like everybody's hip hop, all the different phases that of the trends through skateboarding, and Satori just was the same thing this whole time and it stayed true. And you still, as the knit, you weren't like a Natural Concepts or something, you guys just had the respect from the entire community, even though it was less than 1% that probably actually was your niche. It's pretty crazy.
I think we came in with kind of like a bang, like back then weed wasn't near as popularized as it is now. And so like I remember Volcom used to at ASR shows, the Action Sport Retailer Trade Show, Volcom would always do like these wild things. I showed up one year, they had tortillas in the parking lot and just random shit. And so we're like, all right, we're going to pull an RV in there and just make it like the fucking smoke room. We can't even afford a booth in there because it was like, we couldn't afford it. And so we're like, let's pull up an RV and just fucking have weed and fucking our vibe and do it. And it went well.
Crazy.
Until we left the parking lot at the time. Like, the whole experience is like this Twilight Zone thing. We show up at this place, it was somewhere in Orange County, and the guys were just like drunk, like just beyond blitz, like just wasted. And we're like, we're here to rent an RV. And like, the whole thing was weird. And they're like, all right, well, we got the RV. And then we're at the trade show and we're leaving, and my homie's driving it, my business partner at the time. Empty parking lot, and the dude just isn't looking and like clips a light pole. So the whole back end of the RV rips off. And we're just like, damn. And we're like poor kids back then. We're like, what the fuck are we going to do? And it was like it was a Sunday. ISR ends on Sunday night. So we were just like, let's drop that thing off on Sunday night. And nothing else ever came up. Like, it was just like the weirdest Twilight experience. Like, where else are you going to rent like this huge vehicle? I mean, they did contact us and like, oh, we're gonna, whatever. And we're just like, okay, yeah, no. And like, didn't even know how to handle that kind of situation back then, but somehow it just went away.
Like, young kid, just forget about it and it goes away.
Just went away. I was like, all right, well, that was our first ASR. Let's see what we can do next time.
Love it. Some high-rise shit.
Yeah, no, for real.
Perfect. So you're in the Bay, 98, 99, and you start cultivating in the Bay. Yeah. What was the decision for that? Was that just like, I just love this plant, or I just want to test it out, start with like two plants or something?
Yeah, well, actually, I got lucky enough to, I don't know if you guys know who Mike Dare is, but Mike Dare is like old school pro skater for Stereo. And we became friends, and he was like the guy back then, like in the skate scene, like
Jason Lee, like era. Yeah, yeah,
totally. He was growing weed, you know, they were doing a lot of acid and stuff and skating, like amazing talent wise. So luckily I happened to become friends with him, and I moved in with him. And so it was like his grow. And actually it was like a one bedroom apartment, like three blocks from the beach in San Francisco. So we both slept in the living room, or living area, I wouldn't call it a living room. And then we had like a 4 or 6 lighter in the bedroom. And he pretty much was like my mentor. Like, I always give Mike Dare credit. He pretty much taught me how to grow weed.
Wow.
And he was just like super, just super at like quality. Like, Mike was a quality guy in all realms and just was really passionate about growing quality herb. And so that's how I was introduced to growing, was just like all about the passion and just like, we're growing this for us to get high and not growing it to sell it. It was more of a, you know, personal use type vibe. Of course we were selling it to like pay the bills, but you know, you know, first and foremost was like quality.
Nice. And it was for you guys, what you guys would want to smoke, and then make a little bread on the side.
Yep.
Nice.
And back then we were so dry and there was so little weed. We'd be like, oh, we don't want any weed. Like, just put a little bit in the oven so we can dry it out a little faster. Like, just to smoke it until the rest of the crop dries. Because they, and I was like 98, so there wasn't that much weed around.
Yeah. You know? And then, so you did that in the city for what, just like a year? And then you moved up to Humble?
It was a little over a year. And then another buddy of mine, my original friend that started Satori with, was like, I got some friends up in Humble. And I was like, I never even heard of Humble. And he's like, yeah, we're going to go up there. And so it actually turned out it was like Lee Perry's first show in the United States. Old school reggae guy, did a lot of production for Bob Marley and stuff. Wild guy. So it was like his first show in San Francisco at the, I'm spacing the venue. But so anyway, we went to that show and they were like, we're going to drive up to Humble right from that show. And so we left San Francisco probably like 2 a.m. Get to Arcata and we're like, let's just land at the skate park. And it was like 7 a.m. And I'm like, fuck, we don't know where we're going. Let's just go out and skate for a minute. And literally like 10 minutes later, we get the cops show up at like 7 in the morning and give us a ticket for not wearing helmets.
Oh my God.
I was like, man, this sucks. I don't know about this place. Like, fuck this.
You could grow weed, but you can't skate without a helmet. Right? All right, cool.
And then after being up there, just getting exposed and seeing these indoor grows and seeing what people were doing, it's pretty fascinating, you know? It's pretty fascinating. And got right into it. And then, but it was just such a different world back then. Like, we would pay friends that had nothing to do with it to go to the grocery store to buy our nutrients and stuff. Like, you didn't want to be seen going into the hydro store. So it was like, now you're like, oh, everybody knows everybody. It's all good. But it's like, it was a totally different world 20 years ago.
20 years ago. You've seen it all change, especially being up there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then coming down here, because it's like, you living up there is such a slow pace. It's just actual life. And then you come down to today, we're at Green Street. There's the Green Street Festival Media Day. Juicy J was here. There's like 200 people in one room smoking it out. Just conversation after conversation, loud music. You're used to just hearing, you know,
It's dope.
The trees talking. Dude.
I'm stoked to see where it's at now. Yeah. I mean, I love it.
What did you think 20 years ago? Did you ever think like, 20 years ago, where you're like, I hope it goes legal or, you know, recreational or this, like, I'm sure you went through many phases. 20 years ago, what'd you think?
I never even thought about it back then, you know? We were just thinking, like, how not to get in trouble.
It's like, we don't get caught.
Like, when we first started growing, like, carbon filters weren't really out in San Francisco like that. Like, they came out about 3 years, or at least that I knew about them. And so, like, we were living in this apartment building in San Francisco, just fucking reeking the place up when it was close to harvest time. We're like, oh, yeah, we're just hoping for the best. And then, you know, I think I got exposed or learned about carbon filters in about 2001, 2002, and that changed the game. You know, once you could like get rid of the smell, that was huge. I remember while we were in SF, you know, I was like, we're just stressing and smelling up the block and you just never know what's going to happen. I'm like, well, man, I found this super strong incense. And so we you know, burnt this incense.
It just blends in with the weed.
Yeah.
Just
like, but it fucking ruined the weed.
Yeah.
It fucking tainted the weed. The weed tasted like the incense, the smoke or the, it was so strong.
You could tell.
It was just like, damn, that didn't work out.
That's not good.
So, yeah.
It's like a different level of learning when you start from 20 years ago versus when you're hopping in today with all the technology, right?
Yeah.
And then also you're out there on a farm, so you're working with sunlight.
Yeah.
So, and is that what you predominantly did when you moved up there? You're just working with
back
like...
back in the day, it was mostly indoor.
Indoor up there.
Yeah, okay. I mean, like, you know, I started getting involved in some outdoor around 2001 or so. So pretty early, but like, at first it was all indoor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me put this a little closer to your face.
Yeah.
My bad. Don't hit you with it. Dope. So yeah, at what point, what made you want to go more on the outdoor versus the indoor?
I mean, mostly just like the idea of scaling up, you know, potential to grow more, teams potential to make more money, have a piece of land, just kind of like, just even the whole like just doing it part of it. I'm more of a experience, like walk the path and like what the end result that I'm looking for is type person. So like, I'm not gonna go grow a bunch of outdoor, think I'm gonna get rich, but I was like, this is cool. I like the vibe. I wanna learn being more of an outdoors person. Cause I grew up kind of suburban-ish, so like learning how to use chainsaws, fucking dig holes, and just do the whole thing. I was like, I was just about it, you know.
Yeah, like right in the middle of it. It's like, why not, right?
Yeah,
take advantage of all this shit.
Yeah, you're in the best sunlight.
And I think you always learn the most by doing more in life, you know.
100%.
You know, it's easy to be a boss and not understand what you expect of people, but you're a better boss if you've done everything that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like. That's I like to try and do every aspect of it at least once, you know, even with recently starting like the distribution business and hearing about the drivers. I'm like, well, fuck it. I'm going to take a week on the road and I'm going to be the distribution driver just to see what they have to experience.
Yeah, and, undercover boss, dude. See, see what they go through, how you can better your business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, how you can take care of them better or save time,
all the
certain
above.
Things.
Yeah,
totally. And then in terms of talking trees, like at what point, like licensing and compliance, did you decide, or was that a goal the whole, you know, maybe the last 10 years, 5 years, you're like, all right, cool. At a certain point, let's do this. Let's like move over.
For sure. Yeah. I actually started the brand in 2013, just to like create a nonprofit. And so it's kind of a cool story. You know, I didn't think of the name. I had like a couple working on my farm back then. And, so they were kind of managing out there like the day-to-day stuff, and they went to the local grocery store to open an account, like a charge account. And they're like, well, what do you want the name to be? And and the girl was working. She's like, Talking Trees. And I was like, okay, cool. I like that. And then it was mainly because we had this one spot on the hill. Back then we had like, you know, it was 126 acres, but like the gardens are like 2 miles away from each other because you're trying to like hide it because it wasn't legal yet. And you're just trying to make it look like it's not the same parcel type thing, like the same piece of property. And so we had this one place, it was like the extra credit. It wasn't like the greatest place to grow, but like whenever you went up there in the afternoon, like the wind would blow and the trees just make these sounds and like this creaky noise. And so when she said like Talking Trees, I knew exactly what she was talking about, like where she got the name from. I was like, yeah, that's awesome. Like you just named the brand. And that was that. And then, you know, that property in particular, I bought it after it had already been raided like a couple years before. And so there was all these lists of things from like fish and wildlife and, you know, just permitting shit that I had to do like to get it out of a violation type thing. And so I kind of got thrown into the permitting processes early. And so I started like the permitting process in like 2014. When they didn't even come out with rules until like 2016. And that was in Humboldt County, where it was like the first place that established like a pathway to legalization for getting a permit. And so I was kind of like super early in. I was like already halfway through the process by the time they figured out what the process was going to be.
Perfect.
Just dealing with all the other fucking bullshit grading and just stuff you have to deal with.
Yeah, like the opposite. When you're not doing indoor, you're going to have all this like... like the wildlife, that shit's so crazy. Like you never think about that.
Oh, bro, I got
like what are stories you have with that type of shit?
Owls. There's like supposedly owls on the property, and I'm like, man, I never seen the owl. I don't think we're really doing much that's going to disturb the owls. And there's thousands of fucking acres around here, bro. Like, if the owls aren't happy with my little, like, microcosm right here, they got a lot of room to find a new home right over there. Like, and I mean, you know, I'm not like trying to like destroy environmental at all. Like, you know, I cherish my properties. Like, I don't want any trash or negative impacts on them. But like, you know, they just take it too far. Like, well, we saw an owl up there 5 years ago, and I'm just like, yeah, but I mean, I'm surrounded by thousands of acres.
So what did you have to do? What did they? You have to pay a permit or something? Because
yeah, you got to pay more money. You got to get more reporting done. You got to hire more consultants. You got to say you're not going to, like, do earthwork or drive on the road at this when they're mating and stuff. And you're just like, all right.
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
I was running that shit.
Yeah. I was like, sure. I mean, we'll do it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and I'm sure that's one of a million fires.
It's either that or you don't get a permit, you know.
Yeah, you have to. So. It's just constant. How much of that is the business?
So I'm a big conservationist of owls.
It's like not just it's not
kind of forced into
it for real.
Not that I don't love owls, but you know, like
now I used to love owls. I used to love owls. Damn owls.
Real tight.
Oh man. So we're gonna bounce all over the place, but just Satori, like. Still doing Satori. Is the name of your dispensary?
Yeah.
Okay. Totally.
Yeah.
So how does it all tie in? Like, it just all ties in together. I remember going to Cannabis Cup, the first Cannabis Cup I went to in San Bernardino. Ears took me and Aaron, and we're like walking around. I'm like, there's a high grade booth here? And it was like, buy 50 grams of merch and you get a free gram of bubble hash. Yeah. I remember, and I was just like, whoa, this is so sick.
That one. Yeah. Okay.
Like, I knew, like, obviously, like, you know, we've been in this community for, you know, 8 years or something like that. But seeing that, I was like, oh, loving seeing actual skateboarders like really in the community, you know? Yeah. So the whole Satori thing, it's merch, skateboard wheels, and your dispensary. And how do you kind of like operate that as like under the whole name?
Yeah. Well, they're all separate businesses. So like Satori Wheels and Satori Movement is one business. Mm-hmm. Anything like
cannabis is going to be
not cannabis touching. Mm-hmm. And so the clothing and the skateboard wheels are one entity. And then the dispenser is like, well, you know, especially in Humboldt, you know, it's hard to not go with that name just because I've been in that community so long.
Does everybody associate you like with Satori and the whole community up there?
And it used to be hard to go outside and not see a bunch of Satori people gear. I like, you know, it's funny with my daughter. She's like 14. She's like, Dad, she's wearing Satori. He's wearing Satori. You know, it's pretty cool. She recognizes it. So, you know, we just had like good roots up there. So it's like when I opened a dispensary, it was like, well, let's keep the Satori name going for that. And kind of, I think the only reason why I didn't go with Satori for the cannabis side is because we were a little early and I just didn't want to like.
You like positioned it perfectly though, because it's like now everybody's trying to do what you're doing. They're trying to create the life. They're doing it backwards. They already had the thing. You already had the lifestyle that was your life. That was your brand. You know what I mean? And then the cannabis, where it's like, now everybody has the cannabis and they're trying to build this lifestyle thing to support it. So it's kind of interesting. You're kind of ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah. But trying to keep them like sister company, right? Mm-hmm. It's like not all in one. Cause it was funny, even actually as an example, you know, Satori, like anyone could wear that to school, but my daughter's school sent out an email to all the parents last week about people wearing cookie shirts. And like, they're not allowed to wear cannabis or alcohol brands at school. And they used cookies as an example. And I was like, yeah, you know, when you're touching that wide of a market, it's better to be able to keep them separated.
Yeah,
for sure. You know, people could know that they're identified together, but one's cannabis, one's not.
100%.
Yeah, Satori has nothing to do with cannabis, and unless you're a skateboarder or in your community and you see it. And
yeah,
as a skateboarder, you see Satori and you think weed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, like, but in, yeah, they can't ban that from your school. It's like, it's not a brand that can't do anything.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to ask you about, is you launched this brand in 1998 and Satori Movement's been all about sustainable products. You have vegetable oil wheels, recycled wheel program, and then doing hemp merch and organic cotton merch in 1998. Like, what was that like? 'Cause you know, this dude's like specialty is merch. That's how we built our brand. And sourcing even hemp and organic cotton today is not easy. What was it like in 1998 before the internet craze? And not even people probably didn't even care. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. That shit was crazy.
Was it hemp from jump, like first things, or was it like cotton and then like progressed into different materials and stuff like that? Or was it always like,
well, we were always investigating both. And, a big issue was like, where to find it, you know. There wasn't even the internet today, wasn't like the internet wasn't what it was in 98. You're on dial up like Google, and either Google didn't exist in 98 I don't think, but so it was shit. It was hard, you know, just like sending faxes and stuff. We're sending faxes, like the fax machines were in use. Shit was like crazy analog, but you know, we just searched it out. And so what we actually realized in the first couple of years is like we went with organic cotton. Organic cotton wasn't cool enough. So like nobody was willing to pay $2 more for an organic cotton t-shirt in skateboarding industry. But if you said hemp in 98, they're like, oh, that's fucking, what? Your shit's made out of weed. You know? And so we could charge $3 more for a hemp t-shirt. And so we just like went with that hemp, you know, and you know, hemp's more sustainable than organic cotton even on any level, just on how it reproduces and just the cycle of it all. So it was like, yeah, let's just run with the hemp.
And how was expanding the product line back then, like going from shirts to hats to socks to like with no internet, like how do you do that?
It's pretty wild, dude. I'm
ASR,
you know, and I've never had investors, so like it was wild to be like, I'm gonna hire a clothing designer, but I can't pay. I don't know how I'm going to pay her.
Right.
And, you know, I took that leap, and actually just in the cycle of business, that taught me that any person you hire should pay for themselves. Right. Mm-hmm. Like if you're hiring quality people, they're going to bring so much value to the table that they're going to create their own, you know, paycheck. And so this person happened to be very good at what she did and being a great designer. It worked out well. You know, we got right into Whole Foods. We were selling to a lot of Whole Foods stores for clothing. We sold to Urban Outfitters for a minute, Zoomies. I mean, it was
how is scaling that with no investors?
Super challenge. And back then I had super long dreadlocks, a beard.
Yeah.
Wore sweatsuits.
Because we're very similar.
Me walking into a bank to get a loan wasn't like the easiest thing to do.
I can only imagine. Like,
and I just didn't know. I never went to college. I didn't know how to navigate that world too much. So it was rough, you know. But we were always doing good, growing. And then 2008, the economy crashed. And that just fucking hit me hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, hit me hard.
On the Satori side.
Yeah, Satori life, everything.
Because that's the thing about the brand, dude. You've like gone through the waves of it, you know, and it's not. And because you do it so organic and you do it yourself, you're not, you know, you can ride the waves in skateboarding and you're like, all right, I'm going to take this couple years mellow and then boom, let's like, you know, redrop this thing and still kicking.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to maintain relationships, you know. 2008, you know, there's still some vendors I actually still owe a little bit of money to, but we have a relationship and we've been paying it off over time. So it's everything in life's all about the relationships, and if you keep the relationships good, you can kind of ebb and flow with the tides.
How hard is that being up in Humboldt? Like, you're so removed from the industry, whether it's skateboarding or cannabis. How is that keeping those relationships?
I mean, these days it's easy because of the web, you know, like communication's super simple. Back in the day, it was just like, if I started doing business with someone in China, I went to China and I met them and established a friendship or a relationship before we did business or before like big money would get involved. So I'm kind of more of like just building those relationships and like going to wherever I need to go. On one trip, I went to the skateboard factory. We were going to do decks because they used to have Creation skateboards. And man, I went there. I was like, no, we're not doing business here. This shit was like 4 hours up some beaten ass roads. And it was like, this is a warehouse? It looks like an old blown out like school that like got.
And they're just pressing boards.
And there's somehow board presses in there. And like, I don't know. It was just like, yeah, this isn't working. This isn't legit.
This ain't going to cut it.
So, you know, I just always made the move to try and go visit, no matter where it was in the world, who I'm going to do business with, before I start doing business with them.
Yeah.
And build those relationships before anything bad can happen.
Mm-hmm. Dude, that's so much of it.
Yeah. How was the, like, marketing it? Like, what was your marketing plan back then? Like, launching this brand? Like, was it, like, skate-inspired? Obviously, like, your team, stuff like that. But, like, when we pay stickers, like, what'd you do? Like,
mixtapes.
There was no marketing.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's skate
start doing shit, right?
Skate marketing.
I mean, my philosophy was always bring it to the people. My philosophy was always...
Just get it out.
Bringing it to the people is going to be more effective than paying a magazine for a piece of fucking paper. And so that was like kind of what we built Satori on. Is like, let's start doing tours. Let's get out there. Let's just like get out and get people on the wheels and skate with them rather than like spend a bunch of money in Transworld because we didn't have it.
Right.
And like, I'll never forget, like we went on one of our first tours ever, dude. Mm-hmm. And like, just got all these stickers, we're so hyped, and like my fucking partner puts the box on the top of the van.
Oh my god.
And then like literally we get on the highway and then someone's like, what? And there's like fucking thousands of Satori stickers just blowing on the highway. It was in Massachusetts. Vermont. We just left.
Got a gang of stickers floating around Vermont till this day.
Yeah, right. They're proud. I mean, yeah.
So it's all like the marketing back then was the team and content.
It was the team and just being super grassroots. Yeah. Like we just brought it grassroots as could be, just get out there, skate with people. You know, we eventually started spending money in magazines a little bit. I never really saw the ROI on that because I was always spending money on skateboarding, but we were making money off of Whole Foods. And so the clothing was like really doing super well, but I was so focused on skateboarding. So I was like, kind of putting our marketing in the wrong place for like the ultimate growth of the business, but you know, we're just kids fucking trying to do something, you know.
I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah. I've learned a lot since then.
And like how much of that skate experience can you attribute, you know, the cannabis brand and the success in cannabis
to? Huge, man. I learned so much. I mean, cuz I had the time back then, like I read a Nolo book on how to start your own company or hard start your own corporation or whatever, those little yellow black books that used to be out back in the day when there was books around. And so I read about starting a corporation, LLC, I read about it all. And like, I did all the work. I like actually filed the forms with the Secretary of State and did the whole thing. And so like, I knew how to do it. Nowadays, I don't have the time. Like I just pay attorneys to do that stuff. But back then, like, you know, I just taught myself how to do it all.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
To the end. Just like, another thing, just skateboarding, a big thing in skateboarding that we learn is patience and failure. Sure. And like, I was just thinking, you know, as a grower, especially you're not indoor, you're working with the sun, patience, dude. Like every time we go to these facilities and especially the indoors, they turn out so much faster and that still you have to wait weeks, you know what I mean? Yeah. Months. And outdoor timing is even different. So like how much, like what are some of the things that you've like learned in skateboarding that you've like taken over to, you know, the cannabis, whether it's business, cultivating, whatever, the community?
Yeah, good question. I don't know how much you can attribute to skateboarding versus your own personal attributes to learning things. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, skateboarding taught me community big time. Like, back in the day, you saw someone with a skateboard, that's your homie. Yeah. Anywhere in the world. And so
doesn't matter what they believe. Doesn't matter. You don't have, it's like one kid per county or city that skates. Yeah. So like
even if they didn't have a skateboard on them, you saw they were wearing Airwalks or fucking Vans back then. You're like, you could just go up to them and be like, what's up? And you had a friend.
Yeah.
It was like instantaneous. Like it was just like such a good brotherhood. Which is awesome to see that it's a good sisterhood these days, dude. Like, it's amazing to see. Yeah,
that's
like,
great, dude. It's so sick.
How many women and females are skating these days? It blows me away. Amazing. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Props to the ladies. I barely skate. I skate like once a month, but at my little park. But if I ever go to another park, even at my park, there's like always a girl skating almost every time, if not like a group of them. It's so sick.
Yeah. And it's ripping.
Shredding.
I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's been really cool to just see that whole thing evolve in the last 10-20 years, because there wasn't very many women skaters back
then. Five, you know. Yeah, we could name them all, you know. Yeah. So
before, I mean, there was nothing before Alyssa Steamer.
Yeah,
she kind of paved that way and opened the doors, and it's awesome to see. Like, so I really appreciate just seeing how wide and expansive skateboarding's gotten, and mm-hmm. just like inviting people, transgender, all that. It's like, it's good.
And that's how it's kind of
skateboarders
always
tend to be pretty much haters, you know?
Skateboarders are haters. Oh, man. Oh, man.
You got rollerblades on, you're getting hate. Like, skateboarding is a hater kind of history.
I think most skaters
skaters are like evolving, and we're all growing, and you know, we're from being an outcast, it's easy to hate on everybody because we're being hated on. Like at high school and stuff. And
we were all the outcasts. That's why we skated.
Now we're more inclusive in society. So mm-hmm. like we're more like opening up to like other aspects. And I think it's cool, man. I'm like, I love seeing it.
I always can compare, like, obviously, okay, the golden era of skateboarding, probably like right when you started Satori, right? Like the late 90s. That's when I came into skateboarding. So I got to experience it as like a fan, as a young teenager or whatever. Like, I kind of relate that to cannabis today. Like, when these fools were starting their own brands, when Rick Howard and all the everybody left, and then they're all starting their own brands, there's like that golden era, DC Super Team, all that shit, right? And like before the corporate companies come in, all these grassroots skater-owned garage companies were the ones that were taking over before the corporate companies come in, and that's like kind of how we view cannabis today. Like, do you see any? I mean, you started a brand in 98. Do you see the similarities from the golden era to right now in cannabis?
Yeah, big time. I think any industry, especially, well, you know, my fortes are skateboarding and apparel. There's always waves, and cannabis is experiencing that wave right now. And so I think a lot, it's going to change. Like, right in the last few years with skateboarding, actually, I kind of delved out of it like about 5-6 years ago, and then it was like major brands, Element, Enjoy, there was like 6-8 brands that dominated the deck market, and then today there's like 60 brands that are all spreading it, and those Elements are nothing really right now in the market. And so it's kind of diversified, and that happened like, you know, another 10 years ago that happened, like when Enjoy and all those other brands started. So it's like every industry and everything in life is just a fucking wave. And it's going to go up, and then it's going to go down. And right
the
now,
pants are going to get baggier, the pants are going to get tighter. Exactly. The pants are going to get baggier.
They're getting baggier right now, thankfully.
Yeah.
I'm over that mom wearing your sister's pants thing. So I'm happy to see people wearing pants that aren't so tight. But either way, I don't care. But like,
just the waves, man.
The waves. It's all about the waves, man. And cannabis is in a big downward wave where I think, you know, the strong will survive, the resilient, the smart, and it's going to go back up and we'll all surf.
That's what Brett was saying on the last episode. He was like, mark my words. He's like, in 6 months, there's going to be a lot of people gone. Yeah. He's like, it's going to be crazy.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So luckily, I don't have any investors to answer to, so I think I'm going to try to weather the storm.
Yeah.
And just keep trucking, man. Just keep trying to play the cards.
And so talking trees, you guys just focusing on the flower and the solventless hash. That's kind of what your guys is.
Yeah, our
niche is.
We're just trying to stay in the lane of like focusing on flower. And we do all genres. So I do sun grown, mixed light, and indoor.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we rebranded the indoor as Loud Trees now. So it's like its own brand. But yeah, so category wise, though, flower, pre rolls, and bubble hash.
Okay, cool.
And just that's what we do.
And just running it.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then you guys work with Space Gems.
Yep.
With the hash.
Yep. I'm a partner of Wendy's and Space Gem. And so we provide all the bubble hash for those.
Nice.
Awesome Space Gems.
Yeah, Space Gems.
Yeah, those are fire.
Yeah.
Just like all natural products.
They're just the best gummy in the planet, you know? I tried another one today. They're like, oh, here's a new rosin gummy. And so I'm like, I'll try it. Yeah. I'm open. I'm down for someone to like, you know, persuade me that there's something better out there. But no, Wendy's done an amazing job. Product's amazing. It sells, you know, it speaks for itself.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love the tinctures because I like the heavy edibles for the late night. So
yeah.
They
add a little tincture into that water, low. You're good.
Ooh, that'd be perfect, right? A little sparkling water. Hell yeah. What do you guys got going on for 2022 for Talking Trees?
Yeah, well, just mainly rolling out like new unique strains, you know, trying to focus on strains that nobody else has. So doing some breeding and indoor pheno hunting. And pretty much from May forward, will pretty much be like strains indoor phenos that nobody else has on the market. So we're not like competing for strain for strain with another brand.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to focus on unique cultivars, obviously high potency, as well as just well-rounded with terpenes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, also rolling out, trying to go 100% compostable with our packaging.
Yeah, that's so and huge that's with like, everything that you guys do, yeah, from Satori to the cannabis brands.
Yeah, so our pre-rolls are like fully implemented to like go 100% compostable packaging like next month. And pretty excited about that.
Dude, awesome. Yeah.
So getting away, you know, this Mylar bag right here is fully compostable in your backyard. So you can just throw it in your compost in your backyard and it'll become soil.
That's yeah, amazing. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked. So, you know, I've just always been that kind of guy. Like, just, I don't know. It's always cared about the earth. I happen to be born on Earth Day, so maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But even when I was 15 at my first job at a golf course, I'm like seeing them throwing away all these aluminum cans, and I'm like, well, fuck, we could just recycle these and make money.
Skater mentality. I
yeah, 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 survival, yeah. And I was like, well, I'm making $100 a week recycling fucking soda cans.
When $100 went far back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, when I was 15. That was
gas was a
amazing
buck or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, just little things. Like, why not? Like, all I got to do is throw in a separate trash can here and then take it to the recycling place where they pay you cash. Like, yeah.
I mean, I would do that.
I was the fifth of six kids, and my parents were poor, so I learned how to hustle.
Dude, and you're out, like, I would go out skating in the summers. I keep trash bags in my car, and I would just literally fill up trash bags at the skate spots because the janitors were off, and I would just fill up trash bags with cans, and I'd make like 30-40 bucks a week. Gas was 90 cents.
Yeah,
food was cheap. You could actually like live on that shit, sell a couple old boards, you know, like pick up, like literally I used to just recycle shit trash from skate spots when I was like trying to come up, like
that's dope.
But so you've always been like that. Was it when you started smoking weed, did that enhance that, any level of awareness or consciousness, or was it, you know, always just on your mind? Just took it to the next level?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anything like affects me that much as a person as where I was already going to.
Yeah,
I mean, it might have helped influence it more and just kind of put me in line with the right people, I think, in life, actually. Kind of like skateboarding did, you know? You create that community. And back then, like, cannabis was, like, similar. You're in a unique community. Because when I moved, there was like 96. And so I was right when 215 passed. So Dennis Perrone had his place on Market Street, and a buddy of mine that we were staying with at that house we were living at on 24th and Mission or York. It was a York Street house, what we called it. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to go hang out with Dennis. And I got involved with like just that whole scene of like 215 and the emergence of legal cannabis, and I got my first script from Dr. Todd McAria, who was like, you know, he's lost his license from the medical board for writing 215 scripts. So San Francisco was like where the epicenter of legalization started.
Is that where like Jason Beck was up there way back then?
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, yep, totally. Yep.
So you've been in it since that. You were around the community.
Yeah.
96 from
since,
the beginning,
since I moved to San Francisco. Yeah.
Damn, crazy.
Yeah.
Was a lot of the other dudes you were around, they were just still like, I just want to smoke weed, do this shit, grow it, but I'm not really trying to get into the, I'm not gonna get my script. They weren't really trying to be part of the community. Was that kind of like a shift where you're like hanging off the skaters and now I'm starting to meet?
Well, funny thing is, the only reason why I got a script was because I got arrested in 99 with a bunch of pounds coming from Humboldt down to San Francisco. So I wasn't even, let's see, in 99 I was like, how old was I? 21? 21? I would have been 21, 18 in 96. So anyway, something like that. So I was probably 21. It's funny, Ed Salego, pro skater. I was like trying to get SF for his birthday. It was like October 30th. That's why I always remember his birthday. And I'm like driving from Humboldt. Oh, and that's the point. I was too young to rent a car. So I'd have friends that were 25 rent me a car for 24 hours. I'd make a run to Humboldt from San Francisco, grab some weed and drive back all in 24 hours. And one run just didn't go so good, and I got arrested. And so that was like, all right, that was 99. I didn't have my 215 card yet. We were hanging around like Dennis Brown and them. But I didn't get a card. And then once I got arrested, boom, went and got the card. And then that card got me out of 2 arrests.
After the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
I got arrested, but then the charges got dropped.
Yeah. Because the card.
Yeah. I got arrested in Orange County in 2004 on the way to an ASR trade show, actually. And, yeah, that was fun.
Come a long way. Yeah. Now we're looking at billboards and,
billboards.
About to be on Super Bowl commercials. Yeah, now we're, talking about it on a podcast.
Yeah.
So crazy. How is that? That's another thing. Like, we work with a lot of, OG dudes who transition into the legal market, and we work with a lot of people who just start with the legal market, and we work with the OGs. We see some of them, I don't know, I call it like trapper trauma. There's just some dudes just don't want to be, they're still getting used to being on camera. Like, we're trying to make little short docs on people, and we cannot find a photo online, and yeah, and they know they have to put their face out there, but they're still
hesitant
to,
That's where the skateboard background, I think, comes in to help. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just being a skater and just dealing with the skateboard business and that whole world, I think, breeds resiliency. Yeah.
You learn a lot in skateboarding.
Yeah.
Get the shit kicked out of you every day.
Street smarts. I mean, even as a kid, I grew up in Atlanta. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and I just, night and day, bro. I was 13 on New Year's Day down in the city of Atlanta on my own, just skating the whole city. Hell no, my daughter wouldn't be in the middle of any city these days.
Remember,
somehow it was happening back then. And, I convinced my parents to let me go to New York City alone at, 15. It was all a lie. And supposedly there was an adult there, but there wasn't. And, I'm roaming the streets of, Manhattan at 15, skating.
And that's when Manhattan was crazy.
But, dude, we were just skaters. We weren't, mischiefs. We weren't, trying to get into trouble. We just fucking wanted to skate.
Yeah.
And, it just bred a whole community of, I think, strong-willed people that like to do stuff, and fucking nothing's going to stop them.
Like, our ambition to land a trick. We will travel to another state to go check out this spot with security and cops. Yeah. You know what I mean? Somehow make money to go buy tapes, charge these batteries. Being a 15-year-old kid with a VHS camera, a Hi8 camera, learning how to plug that in and VHS to VHS editing and stuff, you just find a goal. Same with cannabis. I want to, this is the final thing I want. How do I get there?
Yeah.
And then you're like, shit, I got to learn a whole lot cannabis to get there, man. We've been to
skaters are willing to do it. Shit. Look at my elbows, your elbows, our knees. We took some, beatings. It's not easy, but you love the adventure. You love that fucking thrill of trying to fucking get that trick.
And then it's you look back on it. It's the skateboard took you everywhere, you've been all over with the skateboard, and that's kind of how I look at it with this. It's this plant, and then these cameras are going to take us, to Spain for Spanibus. They're going to take us to Amsterdam one day. They're going to take us to who knows fucking where. So just find that one thing, that tool, and then that passion, and let it,
get adventure. Community,
Fuck yeah.
So, building the community, for sure.
Community is everything, especially in cannabis. It's with culture. I think that's why, we totally wanted to have you on. It's skateboarders, we understand each other. There's a culture. And in cannabis, there's a culture. And there's all these corporations and people come in here from other industries. And then you don't understand. You can't come in and just buy this shit.
Yeah.
You have to work with the community. You have to be authentic. And
I think the cannabis culture is still learning that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of interesting. There's some really cool legacy stuff going on, and our mad appreciation for all the people that are legacy, but all the new, just not in tune. And, I hate to just stereotype it as suit and ties, but it's hard,
Yeah.
It's like being a skater and being now ASR is run by rollerbladers. You kind of feel away.
Same exact thing.
It's the same way. Man, you guys haven't gotten your feet dirty and
No, exactly. So you've been
in here for the wrong reasons.
You've been going to these trade shows forever in cannabis.
Yeah.
So I was going over some, typing your name into Google and stuff, and watching you at shows in 2017, getting interviewed by dudes in blazers and stuff. And at that point, you're just talking. At that point, the dude was saying you guys were already veterans of these shows in 2017. So You've been going to these cannabis shows since, for how long? Since,
oh man, forever. I mean, I've been at every Emerald Cup there's ever been. I was at the first one. Mainly I brought Satori, the clothing brand, at the first Emerald Cup. And that shit was like fucking crazy. That was just like a big tent in a pouring rain parking lot. Actually, like the first 10 Emerald Cups were just like pouring rain. Like kind of, you know, I mean it in the most endearing way. They were shit shows. But it was like the community coming together. We fucking loved it. We weren't going to miss it. Everybody was there for the right reasons. And the weather fucking sucked. But we still made the most of it and had great times. And now to see where the Emerald Cup's at and like how, you know, that heart and soul of like, you know, Tim and Taylor, it's like, it's awesome to see that. And seeing the legacy people succeed and just do well. It's like,
it's like the best show.
You guys deserve it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Would you say that's like the best show that represents, you know, cannabis or whatever in terms of the award shows and stuff?
Yeah.
But in terms of like these other trade shows, like the, have you been to like the MJ BizCon type champs forever?
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Have you seen those evolve?
Man, I remember like, holy shit, that's a funny one. Okay. So like champs is like, I don't even know what the acronym stands for, but it's like mainly like the smoke shop.
Yeah.
Like wholesale glass stuff. And like rolling papers and dildos and that kind of weird shit that I don't know why
smoke shop
sold out. Yeah. Stuff. But dude, that show used to be like pretty good for us. Like we would sell a lot of clothes there. People pay with credit card. And then
a lot of wholesale orders for all the shops. Oh, like that killed for you stuff. Guys. Yeah.
It was great. And there was like offshoots, AGE, which is like more heady glass shows. They were all in Vegas, and they were all more like, you know, heady glass type vibe stuff. And I took a break from them, and then I was like, oh, Champs. And I was like, all right. So I went to Champs like 3-5 years later, and it was just fucking vape carts, like just nicotine vape carts galore. The show was like 5 times bigger than it was before, and it was just all this shit. And I don't know what it's like now.
Dude,
I feel like it's like in phases. Maybe. Like 1 year we go just like CBD everything, and then it's like Delta 8,
and then it's like Kratom.
It was the first show that I ever did see a vape cart at, like a CO2 pin at.
Yeah,
a long ass time ago, and it was like somebody was like, "This is gonna be the thing," and I was like, "Yeah." And sure enough, carts are the thing.
Next thing, hot dog water.
So yeah, that was, I mean, those shows, I think. Our new, like some emergence happens, you know, there was like a lot of creativity involved. And I mean, those shows were always good for us. Champs was always a good show for us. So
certain niche, certain. Yeah.
But just to watch it evolve and like change as the market changed, it was like heady glass to import glass to like vape galore all of a sudden. And then I think it's kind of shrinked back into like a little bit more of a heady show.
And like when you guys were doing the wholesale orders, these shops, they didn't know you were a skate brand. They didn't care. They just looked at the Satori merch as like, this is just sick stuff to have in the head shop, right?
Yeah, I think so for the most part.
And all these skate companies are like trying to close, you know, trying to like, yo, we're going to get this shop. All the homie shops, everybody's broke. And then you're on this whole other lane.
I'm in a whole other lane, man.
Skaters are so like this. They have no idea that that's even a thing that you would be doing.
I'm selling to Co-ops, Whole Foods. You know, we were in like a lot of Whole Foods stores for a few years before the economy crashed. And it's crazy. Yeah, it was different.
The Whole Foods was mostly merch or like accessories or just kind of everything?
No, it was merch. You know, we were doing women's clothing and that was pretty big with them. And it was like 2006 to 2008 where they were starting to put a apparel aspect into their stores. But then once the economy crashed in 2008,
they're like, let's cut that.
Let's stick to like meat and potatoes. And the market. Clothing isn't. But like we were in there, like what they call it, the I forget what the department, whole body apartment department.
Yeah,
I think. And like at all competing with salves, tinctures, toothpaste. You know, we were often like within the top 20 selling SKU in that department.
Crazy.
Like our women's shirts and like the socks and stuff. So, you know, we were doing good. Yeah.
Dude, it's like as core skateboarding as you can get, but also touching all sick, these yeah. other things.
With selling it's, yoga clubs dude, and yoga studios so and sick. Yoga moms. Yeah, we were doing it.
It's just bigger than skateboarding. Yeah. Coming from skateboarding, skateboarders think skateboarding is the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, I love to see that.
But every skateboarder is going to evolve to have a life after skateboarding because it's a short life.
I hope so. We hope so.
You know? Yeah.
We hope so.
Just being dive into punk or yoga or whatever, construction or drugs, you know, all that, but, you know,
we've got the experience to be good at whatever we dive into, even if it's drugs.
Yeah, we're gonna be really good at doing it.
Well, it's like the addictive personality almost that gets you, you know, into skateboarding, because it's gonna take somebody, you land that first kickflip and then you're gonna spend another 500 tries doing it, and to get that feeling, it's almost like addictive personality. So I feel like skateboarders, most of us probably have that. So if we can just channel that into anything productive, like, you know, we could be successful.
And with that, I mean, I think we're also, there's a resiliency in skateboarders and like this strength, because I know a lot of friends, great pro skaters that like fell to addiction, but somehow just got themselves out of it. And like, not too many people can do that. And it's very easy being in the world we live in, like in skateboarders, like it's just all party. It's all fun and games. Like, here's, you know, drinks, drugs being fed to us since we're kids. So it's easy to see how, you know, some of our friends fall into that addictive, you know.
Yeah, and then we're all
time in space. But like, I've seen multiple friends of mine like just get themselves out of it and just be super clear. And I think that's like from, you know, trying a trick 50 times, jumping down 12 stairs and like
figuring
shit out. You're hurting yourself. And so even when they're doing those drugs, they're hurting themselves. They know it, but they're figuring it out. And most people, thankfully, figure it out and get out. And I see that more with skateboarders than other people that aren't skateboarders. I know that get into an addictive.
You see like professional athletes because they're talented and you get hooked and you can't get off because you're just talented and everything's been kind of easy. It's harder to like, you know, like there's this thing, Jerry Seinfeld, he has this thing where he's getting interviewed and he's talking about how he loves to just sit and watch skateboarders and how he feels like skateboarders are amazing because we could sit there and fail 100 times. And it's like, we're getting frustrated, but we're going to do whatever the fuck it takes. You know what I mean? We're going to go till the battery dies.
One moment of glory.
God, and then nothing else mattered. It's like, you did it first try. When you landed, it's like, I did that shit first try 4 hours later. Like, till the battery blink, till the battery dies, till the tape dies, till the cops come, till you can't fucking walk, you're going to land that shit. You know what? You're going to try until you can't, till you can't go. So yeah, that energy into anything.
That resilience,
You got anything?
Whatever it takes.
So nowadays, like, how's your time spent between the two brands? Is it like pretty equal, or is it like a lot more time is spent on the cannabis side versus the clothing, or like kind of how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, mostly like, I actually have like 9 businesses, so like most of it's cannabis for sure is most of my time. You know, the skateboard business, the wheels is kind of like somewhat simple. It's been really challenging with like material supplies lately.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. And so actually everything's a fucking challenge. everything's a challenge, man. I just focus wherever needs my attention most at any given moment. It changes.
Yeah.
It changes.
Like, you got good people around you to
really good people
to help, you know, definitely make shit work.
Solid crew, and I'm super thankful for like that, you know. You can't no one can do anything alone, so
no.
It's all about having good people around, big time.
Yeah, that's huge. And I'm sure like with Satori, it's when you see the waves, it's like you're connecting with certain people that are like, you know, dope video project with De La and, you know, Montage is coming out.
Yeah.
You find the dope kid to collab with or whatever, talented new young kid or whatever, who's inspired by the legacy you've built with, you know, 25-year brand or whatever.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's wild. Yeah, man. It's all something every day.
Did you ever think that you'd be like this dude living on the mountain, going to talk to people at the city and municipalities and licenses? And
no, it's funny. It's like when you're in high school, they give you like a test. I think most kids get, I don't know if everyone gets a test, but they're like what you would be best at in life or what your attitude or the way you answer these questions. Like, oh, you should be a biologist or whatever or whatever. And so as a kid, as a skater, I was like, I just want to be in the city. I just want to fucking skate. Da, 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 da. But I took this test in high school and they're like, I'll never forget it because it threw me for such a loop. They're like, park ranger. I'm like, what? Like, you guys are qualifying me to be a park ranger? Now I'm like, oh, that's dope. I love to be a park ranger. I'm all about it. Beautiful. I'm all about it. But when I was 16, I was like, what the fuck is that? No, I'm going to be a city street skating kid. And yeah, I'm definitely more of the park ranger type of person. Dude,
that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. It's just like finding what actually serves who you are. I feel that too as a skateboarder. I just wanted nothing but to skate. I had all this other stuff I enjoyed, but I suppressed the shit out of it because I just wanted nothing but to skate and make it in skating and see where it could take me, travel the world or whatever. When it all said and done, I'm like, I love it, and that was it. But that's just, I was just a part of it. You know what I mean? Like, it was almost like I like accepted that I was going to be a skateboarder for life. And then I turned pro and I was like 28 or 29. And I was like, man, there's more shit. There's more shit to life than this shit. You know what I mean? And I was like old and broken and I can't really do what I want to do with the boy. So like, and now I just realize like there's all these other things that I wanted to do that actually serve me, who's like I really am deep down. The skateboarding is what I wanted, what my ego and what my mind wanted, you know.
Yeah.
And then I just learned so much, and it was my college, it was my every, you know.
Yeah, brought you a lot of places.
Yeah.
Opened a lot of doors.
Learning culture, learning relationships, communication, even business. Like going to these distros as a kid, going to Listen, going to Giant, and like talking to the reps, talking to, you know.
Yeah.
You just learn, soak it all in.
Totally. Yep. It all, you know, continues on in life to be beneficial. So, yeah, that's the same way. Yeah, I quit everything. Like, quit soccer. Quit everything. I'm like, I'm skating.
That's dope. It's just, it's everything's just so organic. It's just like, I like to skate. I like to make, it's the same shit as us. You know what I mean? We're like, we're gonna make clothes. We're gonna make clothes. All right. Now we're gonna fucking make videos. Now we're gonna throw events. Just, and it just, you know, go with the flow. Whatever, you know.
And it's because it's your own world. It's your own challenge. It's not like a team sport. Nothing against team sports, but like when you're skating, it's all you and it's up to you. And you're just like focused on improving yourself. Whereas like when you're a team, it's like it's way more involved. You know, it's like you can't focus as much. And so I think that focus on self has helped skateboarders in general. In all aspects of life, if you were like really intent on becoming, you know, a good skateboarder or, you know, progressing yourself, whether no matter how good you got, if you're trying to progress in skateboarding, you're putting in some fucking work.
That's it. Yeah.
100%. And that's going to translate into life, whether, you know, growing cannabis or running a business. Like, it's an attitude.
If you can learn how to tray flip, you can learn how to do anything.
Yeah,
exactly. Except it's crazy. These kids
nowadays, I still have a horrible tray flip. I can barely ever get a tray flip.
Man, but I was a heel flip guy.
Okay.
Yeah, me I could too. Always do a heel, flip, more of a heel flip guy.
He had the back heels.
Yeah.
He had
the tricks. Yeah, this fool, like, we grew up skating together. Like, this fool, like,
filmed. I used to film him. He was, like, the hotshot skater in town. I was the little filmer kid. Nice. So I'd follow him around filming and making videos and shit. And now it's, like, 20 years later, roles reversed. It's funny.
He was just smart enough to know that, like, I'm not going to try to make it in skateboarding. He's like, I could do tricks.
I'm like, yeah, I ain't no way I'm doing this shit. You know what I mean? I'm like, I need to figure something else out.
Yeah.
Pick up the camera, do some editing, you know, figure whatever, you know.
Yeah. But it's that passion that led you to learn talents that benefit the long term.
Yep.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys probably wouldn't be in video if you weren't in skateboarding.
Hell no.
Exactly. That's how you learned how to video is from fucking filming
skateboarding. Literally. Exactly. VHS to VHS.
Yeah. Where's the VX1000s, man?
Dude,
start
right?
Bringing out some old school fucking.
I know. We should just shoot all our client stuff. Shit on VX1000s. We should shoot all of our client stuff on VXs.
It's film. It's film. It's hot right now.
Vintage. It's going to be cool.
Yeah.
It's hot cool. Right now.
It'll be the new trend.
Hell yeah. You got any other... Yeah. Cool, man. Well, dude, we appreciate you taking the time to come up here after the event. I'm sure you were exhausted from the hot boxed room and 300 people chopping it up with you, but well, yeah,
that's what I'm here for.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me out, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming, man.
Make sure you guys check out Craig Talking Trees on IG, Space Gem CA, I believe.
Yeah,
those you're gonna have to get exact because the shadow ban fucks us. Satori. You guys find Satori Movement Skateboard on
Story
IG.
Wheels, everything, yeah.
Everything you guys want. So thank you so much again for your time. We appreciate it. Thank awesome. You guys for watching and listening. Make sure you guys hit the subscribe button or wherever, if you're on iTunes or Spotify, make sure to follow the podcast. Till next episode, guys, keep pushing, keep rising. Peace.
Bless.